It's episode 69 of the TV Talk Machine podcast. I am your co-host, Jason Snell, across the internet for me, punch drunk as always, possibly. It's Mr. Tim Goodman. You weren't laughing before we started, and now here it is.
What happened? I'm sorry. I had a Beavis and Butthead moment. It's TVTM 69.
We have a letter about that coming later. I mean, let's just kick it off right here with a letter. We're going to do a letter at the top.
Okay, let's do it.
From Hobo Eric.
Yes.
Hobo Eric here from the Plus 44. Had to write a post for the 69th episode, as I'm totally immature and just want my name heard on the episode numbered 69. Anyway, going to be in the 212 this weekend, which means the Super Bowl will be on. I will be looking forward more to the ads and halftime show and Colbert than the game itself. Who should I root for? And do you think the big four networks could ever lose their most watched program to cable, streaming, or some other now unknown content delivery system of the future?
Wow. Well, I, Hobo Eric, it's always good to hear his emails again.
Yes.
And, good to know that I am like, if he's 14, I must be 13 because I just chimed right in there. You said 69.
I did. It's episode 69. I said it again.
Why is that funny for me? I have no idea. That's so childish. It's just so bad. Okay, I'm a child. No, I don't think that they're never, ever gonna give up the rights to the Super Bowl on network television, because live sports and live events, as we just noticed with Live Greece, that's what drives people to network these days.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about Greece Live. Do you have a pick, by the way? Who should Hobo Eric root for? How about that?
Well, I think I don't like either team because they're not the 49ers. And basically my thing is it's 49ers and then everybody else. But I think it might be kind of interesting to see Cam Newton and Panthers do a little bit of justice. I could probably do without another Peyton Manning Super Bowl. So why not?
I think Hobo Eric should root for the Carolina Panthers, only because I think having a fellow in from England acting as if perhaps he even is knowledgeable about the Carolina Panthers would be hilarious.
That would be good. Yes.
You know, it's all about Carolina Panthers. They're in London. They're big, the Carolinas.
I know. Would that be one of the least known teams, maybe?
Maybe.
Well, Cam Newton's pretty popular. That's a loose team. I mean, remember the 49ers won their first Super Bowl when they were as loose as possibly could be. So there you go. I think I'm going with a loose team. And I think that's... that's our boys, the Panthers.
Sounds good to me. Mm-hmm. Sounds good to me. I will watch it and also watch the ads. I, as somebody who likes football, I always have a problem because I want to watch the ads and the game. And then you can't go anywhere. You can't go to the bathroom. You can't get another potato chip because you've got to watch, you know, and you can't tune away for the ads. You got to watch the ads, too.
Yeah. I'm there for the ads, definitely. And I'm not one of those people who jump online and preview all the ads that everybody's releasing online before. I don't get it. I don't get that.
Are you going to do something about the Super Bowl, like, or the ads or something?
Oh, my
or are
God,
you off?
I hope not. I hope not. I hope that Dan is not hearing this when I say this next sentence, but I hope it's Dan.
I don't think Dan listens to this podcast ever since we sent out our fatwa that killed Firewall and Iceberg. So
yes, he does blame us.
He does. It's our fault.
It's clearly all fart, which is good because we can just make sure. Did I just say all fart?
It's clearly all fart.
Yeah. This is a 13-year-old podcast because we said 69 and somehow the words all fart just came out of my mouth.
Somehow. Clearly.
It's all our fart.
It's all our fault.
Wow. This is really 4 minutes in and we are, you know what?
Brutal.
We might as well do the trifecta. Are you ready?
Uh-huh.
Fuck this.
Excuse me. Checking the box.
Checking the box. We have to get the box checked because
click
now it's
pin.
Got everything.
All right. Check the box.
Excellent.
All right. We've done it. We are now parental advisory on iTunes. So that's
good.
Important. It's important.
I hope
stuff.
It's Dan, though, because I really don't like watching the...
But seriously, I hope it's Dan.
I really don't like watching Super Bowl and then writing about the commercials because it's I want to see the commercials. And to actually see them and write about them, you have to be in a quiet room. You can't be at a bar. You can't be over at a friend's house. You really have to be a person who's not at that party.
On the old... the blog I did in the 90s, TV, we used to do... we used to do a couple of years we did it where we sat around those of us who were in the Bay Area. We sat around at my house and and we tried to like rate the commercials, I think. And, you know, we tried, had like a little plan and all that. And it was so hard because everybody wants to just watch the game, or they just want to watch the commercials. And then you want to back it up, but you can't because everybody will be mad at you. And it was not fun at all.
You learned that you can't really work in a crowd.
No, it's not fun. Not fun. A crowd of people who want to just go on and watch the TV show and not back up. It's like it's a solitary pursuit, writing about TV business. Grease Live happened, and I've seen about half of it. What struck me and what I heard from a lot of other people is that people felt like Fox really kind of blew NBC away, and that they really upped the game. And it seemed that way. It certainly seemed that way to me, that they had multiple sets. They had an audience, so it didn't sound like death where you'd finish the number and there'd just be silence, which was NBC's thing. You know, I think Grease is kind of a dumb musical. Sorry about that. But I think they did a great job with it.
Yes. I wouldn't know.
No, I'm reporting to you. I think that if this is what network TV needs to do is live stunt events like this, I think this is a case where you could roll your eyes and say, "Oh, Fox, you're trying to steal some thunder from NBC," but they won up them. And it sort of reminded me of like when Fox came in and took the NFL from CBS, and they kind of won upped.
Yeah.
What the past sports coverage had been. Yeah. More cameras, more replays, more annoying sound effects and stuff. But they did all of that and they thought about it. That's what it felt like watching Grease Live, is like they kind of sniffed their nose just like at NBC's live musicals and said, we can totally outdo them. And they did. So
that's a great comparison, because, you know, when it came to sports, they definitely Foxified it, you know. And there were some purists who were like, I don't like where these cameras are. And you're kind of like making it a gigantic video game. And that's now the standard. I mean, they were so much more innovative than CBS was. And now, of course, CBS and NBC, they're all doing the 360 cameras and all there's going to be like a pylon camera and there's all that nonsense. But and it's been years since we've had the overhead camera and all that stuff. I think it's great. I think that kind of innovation was needed for the game. And obviously, I'm not a musical fan, clearly, but that is what they needed for this. And the one thing that always struck me, and I had to review. I think I reviewed two of them, and then Dan did this last one. I was always struck by the lack of audience too. It seems kind of like a no-brainer, but the worry was everybody was. You know, it's like, oh, live television, it hasn't been done in ages. Well, it has been, but like, you know, we have this elaborate stunts and everybody's got to hit it just right. And we don't want anybody in here to mess things up. And Fox just said, yeah, that's not good.
Yeah.
And they were right.
You'd think that after one time they would have said, oh, you know, it would really be. How about you put somebody in a studio somewhere watching a live feed and you mic that audience or something? Yeah. I mean, something to make it sound like theater. But Fox did it and it looked good. They did some stunt casting. They had some interesting casting. I was amused to see and enjoyed seeing Catherine Donahue from You're the Worst as one of the pink ladies. So that was kind of fun. It's not really my cup of tea either. Although I'm enjoying the Hamilton soundtrack. I think that's a lot of fun. I want to see the show when it comes to San Francisco. I'm generally not a musical theater person at all. And so, you know, my wife knows all the lines to Grease basically. And so she really enjoyed watching it. And for me, it was like, yeah, I just appreciate it on that other level, that technical level almost of like, oh yeah, they really did up their game. So maybe this is the future. The future of TV is the past. live TV events. I don't know.
Well, you know what's interesting? When I heard about the production values on Grease Live, and Dan did a nice write-up about all that, and THR followed up with a bunch of behind-the-scenes stuff about how it all got pulled off. The first thing I thought about was Bob Greenblatt from NBC, who is, you know, he's the one who started these live musicals. He's a huge theater person, and I can just imagine him thinking, and maybe what CBS was thinking at the time about football, it's like, wait a minute. I did this. I got all the derision about bringing live musicals to TV. You know, I put these on, and I even suffered through Peter Pan live and all that, which is the one I wrote about. I think he's probably thinking, damn it. Why didn't I think of that? Like, they just stole all my thunder. So in some ways it's like, it's now it's your move, Bob, because NBC really has to up its game, right? Like you, and they have, as people have pointed out, there's another musical coming up from NBC. And if you don't give it this Fox treatment, you're kind of just yesterday's news. So it's really interesting. I'm interested in it from that kind of chess game and industry vantage point. But yeah, I mean, I love music, but it just doesn't translate to theater and live musicals. It just doesn't. I have no history of any of like all of that stuff. So
Right. And that is, I mean, and it's definitely a nostalgia trip. These are all, it's not like this is original stuff or it's even recent stuff. This is stuff that people remember from when they were kids, basically. And,
right.
And they're playing it back.
Right.
And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this goes and if NBC responds to Fox's, if they're taking notes or not.
I think they have to, actually, that's the interesting hook to me. But I think they have to, because if they don't, all they're going to do is answer, why didn't you have a live audience and why didn't you do it like Fox did it?
Yeah.
So they either have to go like one above that, you know, they've got, it's really kind of interesting that way.
Should we talk about HBO stuff? There's kind of stuff happening around on HBO these days. Vinyl last week, but it's going to premiere this weekend.
Oh, I am the king, by the way, of reviews done way in advance.
I noticed that you were tweeting out also about the Hulu series, the Stephen King
11/22/63, yeah,
and how that's another one that it's like, hey, I don't even remember writing this review, but the show's still not on.
Yeah, that's still 9 days away.
Yeah,
and it's forgotten. And I also did let's not forget The New Yorker Presents,
right,
which is coming up on Amazon, and then you throw in Vinyl with it and like, oh my god, we're way out early,
but
and
the time is now. The vinyl's time has come,
and so that's great. It'll be coming soon and people were going to watch it, and I'm excited for that. That one's going to be big.
There was actually a nice, I'm just bringing things forward from out of the listener segment, but Indy Sarah, our friend,
yes,
Best Sarah, says, I'd pay the big bucks to watch Vinyl with Tim. It's us and the Dolls, mister.
I know. I loved that. And I think that, you know, well, she's on the other coast, but or near the other coast. But if we could get together, we would have a great time. And that would be great. We could do, that's almost like a live podcast.
Yeah, that's what
Indy,
I was
Sarah
say.
And I like watching and just tripping out on Vinyl. And
that's what, like, I was going to say, is maybe you should be like, maybe you should do like a live tweet or something. I don't know. But it's like, I feel like as this series goes forward, especially, I'm really interested in your take on what they do, because I know you love music so much. I'm kind of fascinated by how can a TV critic who also loves music experiencing Vinyl. It sounds like it could be really interesting, whatever you decide to do. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm working on something to that effect. So
cool.
I will
awesome.
Definitely try that.
All right. So Indy Sarah, maybe the next best thing.
You know, if we had like a pool of excess cash, we could fly Indy Sarah out.
That's true. Yeah, I don't think the ads for socks are going to pay for that.
I don't think that's going to happen. And also, she has a brood, and like, what do you do with the kids? I don't know.
That's not our problem, really.
That's not our problem. That's a good point. Not my problem. You either come out, Indy Sarah, or you don't. Get the babysitter.
But there's other... So Vinyl's coming.
Yeah.
And then there's... what else? Animals, I heard about, which is this animated series on HBO, right?
It is an animated series. And I was just about to make... they also have All Our Farts coming out, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly.
I think that joke needed to be revisited.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
And
that's
I'll go back again.
That's what they call a callback.
It's a callback, and you know the
comics. The French call it the second fart.
I don't know why that made me laugh so hard.
I don't know.
I think whenever you bring the French into something about bodily functions, it just seems so unnatural.
That's what I was going for.
Unless it's an orgasm, I guess. I don't know. Is that another box check?
Just checking the box,
probably. Okay.
Yep.
We're going to cover all kinds of fluids and
check
everything
all
today.
The boxes, Tim. It's episode 69. Check all the boxes.
Absolutely. This should have been the sex issue or the sex podcast. they have. So, okay, here's an interesting thing about animals, which is funny because you and I know that THR has not posted my review yet and it's on tonight. So,
you've written it, right?
I've written it. Yeah, I wrote it this morning.
Okay.
So I'm like, hey, guys, it's tonight. There was a little bit of a glitch on the HBO site, which we worked out, and I was able to fix that and move onward. But here's kind of the interesting backstory. In 2013, I think that was my second year. I don't know how many years I've done it, but I've been a judge what's called an independent pilot competition at the New York Television Festival. And that as the festival's grown and got bigger and has all these different cable channels and networks supporting it, you know, whoever wins that category, like the best pilots, you know, they get some development help, they move on, there's a chance for them to go onward. Well, in 2013, one of the pilots that I judged was Animals. Huh. And I really liked it. It was basically two guys who were in the ad business or in advertising business, and which is kind of the same backstory for Life, The Life and Times of Tim, one of my favorite HBO animated series, and I believe their last animated series.
Wow.
And that was some time ago.
Maybe like Ricky Gervais show, right? I mean, that would be the only other one.
Right. You could say that podcast animation one was the next one. Yeah, that's a good point.
But that's about it. I mean, we don't think of it. Yeah, I remember that was one of my favorites. Yeah. I Life and Times of Tim. You know, the HBO isn't generally thought of as an animation brand, right? I mean, it doesn't happen that often.
It doesn't, and you know, they've never really had anything to put around it. I think those are the three that I remember, and well, counting Animals. And there's nothing around Animals. So when it's on tonight, it's on all by itself at 11:30.
In the dark, lonely.
Exactly.
And it's just the softcore porn after that.
Right, exactly. It'll be like getting a red... Oh, that's Showtime. Red Shoe Diaries.
No, it's real sex and, something else is on after that.
Yeah, Taxi Cab Confessions and
exactly.
All that nonsense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He says like he's never seen it before.
It's all the way down at the bottom of the HBO Go app, all the way at the bottom.
Is it?
Yeah, if you scroll down far enough, you'll find it. But you got to work for it, people.
The dirty bits, mm-hmm. The naughty bits. So it's going to be sitting there by itself. And as I said in my review, that it's more like a series. You know, it's kind of like BoJack Horseman on Netflix in that it's you know, you're talking animals, a little bit of existentialism, a little bit of smart snark. It has that going on. There's an ongoing through storyline to it. But basically, it's just... I said in my review that I think the animators are better than what they're animating. They're just kind of... They want a really basic kind of look to it, almost like The Life and Times of Tim was very super basic. Because the emphasis is on the writing and the words and the vocals, you know, so how they're doing their readings. And the guys who created it are very funny. And I liked the pilot in 2013, and it was hit and miss then. And, you know, to me, the interesting thing about it was you're kind of doing this filthy, foul mouth, snarky thing about these different animals, whether they're rats or pigeons or cats or dogs or whatever. They even had insects do it. And for a pilot in the New York TV Festival, which is kind of an indie thing, it was... Looked like it scraped together, but had potential. Fast forward 3 years to tonight, mm-hmm. International release, worldwide simultaneous international release. You can see Animals.
I don't think that's true.
Probably not.
It's just HBO.
It's just HBO.
Wherever HBO is available. But the HBO doesn't have the reach that this podcast has.
Right. So we're talking about it, but it internationally. But you're right. You can only see it if you get HBO. But it's on tonight. And it's like 3 years on. And... It's weird to see it come to fruition. It basically got helped getting to HBO by the Mark and Jay Duplass, the Duplass brothers. And, you know, they have Togetherness
on
HBO, a show I really like, heading into its second season. And so no doubt they helped shepherd it. I think they brought it out at Sundance as well. And they helped shepherd it, and they got there. The only thing that's different from 2013 is there's just a ton more celebrity comics giving voice to these animals. I mean, the two guys who did it are still there, and they're still like main players. It's Phil, I believe his pronunciation is Matarese, and Mike Luciano, and might have been Matarese. I've never actually heard anybody say his name out loud, so I have no idea.
It's Phil.
It's Phil and Mike, and you know, they're good. They do great on the voices, and they riff well when they're playing characters, whether it's two rats, like in the pilot, or my favorite snippet was the third episode where they play two cats who they've never been outside of this New York apartment, and they're these like lily white, white, you'd think the frou-frou, super rich ladies cat, and they're these brothers who love each other very, very dearly. And to a point of kind of like awkwardness. And then there's a twist to it. and it's by far the best episode. And so there's moments in it that work, but there's a lot of moments that don't work. And it's funny, I look at the thing that interests me is that, okay, 3 years later, here's basically the same thing I saw. It's just now it's got the Duplass Brothers stamp on it, and it's got a bunch of celebrities reading it. But what's happened in the meantime, Jason, is that you have stuff like BoJack Horseman. You have this so many shows on Comedy Central and Adult Swim where this seems like it would be a much more natural fit that have the same kind of comic sensibility. So I guess my I see that you've just posted the call.
Breaking news. The Animals TV review has been posted. So you can check that review out at The Hollywood Reporter. Yeah. It'll be in the show notes now.
I love it, which is basically just what I said. And, you know, it's hit and miss. I don't know how it's going to, like, do. Is it like a – it's kind of like a – you can't say it's a vanity project, but, like, what is HBO thinking? They have no other animated stuff, and it's just going to sit there at Friday nights at 11:30. Yeah. All right.
And another interesting thing they're doing is they're putting it on their streams on HBO Now and HBO Go on Thursdays.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing using it as a test of like what if we put a show out on streaming before it was actually on air, and then it, like you said, it's barely on air because it's on a Friday night at 11:30.
Yeah,
it's kind of weird. And there's only 4 episodes, is that right?
No, there's I think they've got there's 5 that were up for review. I think there's 10 total.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So they're it's out there, but all right. Whatever.
Okay.
That was a very lukewarm endorsement, and then that's, I guess, what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I guess so. I'll read the review later. now that it's up, I want to mention something about HBO while we were talking, which is I got back this week. I started watching The Leftovers again because I only got about halfway through season one, and the sadness of it just kind of crushed me, and I kind of put it aside, and then I never picked it back up again. I've watched 2 or 3 this week, and actually have been liking it a lot. I think it helps that I've been watching it during the day. It's been my lunchtime entertainment, and not being exhausted and ready to fall asleep in that show, which is melancholy and slow paced, has been actually helpful. It compensates for the tone of that show a little bit, and I've really enjoyed it. So I'm powering my way through season one, so I can then watch the wackiness of season two.
Yeah, that's interesting. That is a tough slog through that. It's I love that first season. It's really dark, and much darker than the second season.
Well, the guest episode is I thought was spectacular. You know, where she goes, where Nora goes to the convention in New York City, and has her identity hijacked, and she gets to walk among the people who don't know that she lost her family and see how they feel about the people who lost their families, and then ends up meeting Brother Wayne at the end, and I thought that was one of the best hours of TV I've seen in a long time. I was very impressed with that episode. So
yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, I'll keep watching.
And it has one of the, most, the ending to that season is just heartbreaking. And, for a season where it was, dealing with loss and grief and explorations along those lines, which I found fascinating, even though it's sometimes hard to watch. Boy, when they drop the hammer at the end, it's just like, I just was like, crushed, and then I was like, okay, pretty amazing performances across the board, but it's just tough to watch. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, well, that'll be a lunch for me next week.
Okay.
So we'll check it out. What else? Anything else going on, or should we move on to the letters?
Let's move on to the letters. There's not that much coming on. You know what? I'll tell you what, I like that we have the Super Bowl obviously this weekend, but I don't think you and I really are that invested in it. And I just think that we're in this part that I love right now. It's that it's like, for me, I'm happy to be exhaling and moving onward. The only show that I think that we have big stuff coming, clearly, but I think the only show that people are really, I think, jabbering about constantly is People versus O.J. Simpson. American Crime Story on FX, which is great and did gangbusters. And, I'm watching that one, and I'm excited. I didn't have to review it, but I'm watching it, and people should be watching that. So in case we didn't really touch on that, that's one to add to the pile.
All right. Yeah. I don't know if I can do that one.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. More of my life devoted to the O.J. Simpson trial. I'm not sure I can go there.
I know. It's tough.
Having lived through it. All right. Let's go on to the letters. We got one from Alan on Facebook. And he sent a link that we'll put in the show notes. He says, Jason, please read this piece from The Hollywood Reporter by Tim's colleague Dan Feinberg on why Survivor is still great and see if it convinces you to come back and give the show another try. Because he said that it was revitalized last season. And so I will read that story. And I am skeptical about whether I will give Survivor another try only because I'm so far behind on all my TV shows. I'm not sure I really need to pick up another show, but I will check it out.
Yes.
Maybe I'll binge some Survivor sometime when I've got the flu or something.
It's peak TV, baby. And yeah. 20 season series is tough to jump back on.
Yeah, exactly right. Even if I take Dan and his word that it's revitalized, I'm not sure I would give it the time, but I will check it out. Dean from the 707 has an update from his travels.
Yeah,
he is watching the Gunsmoke pilot in the 620, which is of course Kansas.
I don't even have the wherewithal to even know where I would be able to find that first episode of Gunsmoke. Is that somewhere? Maybe it's on DVD or something.
I don't even know, but he found it somewhere.
Man. That's good.
So that's our update from Dean. He is he's watching somewhere near Dodge City. He is watching Gunsmoke. So that's good to know. We had a good one on Twitter from Cowrin, I think, which is it's a good question. If 11/22/63 is shown on British TV, will it have to change its name to 22/11/63?
See, that's silly too. That's just like a sex joke almost, but it's a British joke.
Yeah. That's a good one though.
That's a date joke.
I think they're going to change the name to the day Doctor Who premiered, which is I think 11/23/63.
See,
sorry, 23/11/63. Something
like
that.
That's really too much knowledge.
Yeah, that's some nerd trivia. Okay, we've got, let's see, Matt from the 650.
Okay.
Although he's coveting his 415 mobile number from his earlier life.
Oh, you got to have it, right?
You got to keep it.
It's like a little gem.
Matt says, first off, let me say how much I enjoy TVTM. Not only have you guys turned me onto shows I was not aware of or wouldn't have thought to watch, Jane the Virgin being the poster child, but you consistently strike a great balance between entertainment and information. So thanks for that. Well,
today.
Today, maybe less so, but thank you.
maybe less of both. I have no idea.
Fans of the previous version of the TV Talk Machine would argue that we have far too much information.
Oh my God, so much information. It's,
I believe we've outlasted the total information content of that original TV.
Oh, no doubt. Like somewhere back in the 30s.
Episode 10.
Yeah.
Somewhere
20s,
like that.
30s. Yeah, exactly.
Like that. he goes on, after hearing a groundswell on Twitter about Lucifer, I grabbed the first episode off iTunes, and I have to say, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Tom Ellis is wonderful, and the writing was pretty good, I thought. I have some reservations about Lauren German, but by the end of the pilot, they had somewhat subsided. It must be said, though, Lucifer, an excellent example of cop, not a cop. So,
indeed.
Yes, we mentioned that last time, but I think that's interesting. I have not watched Lucifer because I've heard bad things about it, but here is a vote from Matt that has good things to say about
this
it.
This is why we watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like,
judge
who would
yourself.
Have thought I would, like, somebody even brought this up to me the other day, and not that it wasn't you. And didn't hear the podcast, and they were like, "You liked Magicians?"
Yeah,
I was like, "Yeah, that's kind of like Jason L's approach to it." Like, really interesting.
Yeah. I did like the Magicians too. Although what I found is that the episode you liked, episode two, I didn't like nearly as much as I liked episode one. But you liked it in reverse. So different things, different strokes for different
folks.
That's
why we watch.
It's okay, that's why we watch. That's a good motto. We should have that be inscribed on something.
Yes,
I don't know.
Right after. All our farts.
Yeah, right after clearly all fart.
By the way, that's the nature of a callback. The more you say a joke that doesn't work, the funnier it gets.
Yep.
Yeah. So by the end, every time I say all our farts, it's going to be pants wetting.
Yep, it is.
Yeah, it's actually getting there.
It is. Oh, too much information. You know, they make underpants that you can order on the internet. Nope, not this week. Okay, so here's another one. This is from our friend My Vogue on Poetry in the 716. Yes. Mm-hmm. He wrote a letter this time, didn't just tweet at us because he had a lot to say. Mm-hmm. I'm watching Person of Interest, and while I'm enjoying the experience quite a bit, I find I'm having a hard time overcoming my CBS bias about it, which makes me wonder, how do networks get the majority of their shows to have the same overall look and feel? I realize in these times of confusion, all networks want a uniform brand, but do they have special cameras? Does it all go through a special filter before being distributed? Are there rigid brand guidelines that must be followed? With different writers and creators, camera operators and actors, I'm just wondering how it happens. One of the reasons I love Mr. Robot so much is that it had a different approach and stood out. With all your experience, can you immediately tell what network a show is on if you see a clip? I think that's great. I think that's a great question. Some networks you can tell, right?
I feel like you can. I think there was a time. I definitely feel like I can see a CBS series and know it's a CBS series. Yeah. I mean, that's interesting about the about
like down
the
to the
colors and the lighting,
color temperatures and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. It's like CBS's shows look, you know, they're kind of warm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if you were a very technical person, you could probably say this is what they're doing because it feels like they are doing something. Although I always felt that even like with watching football games, to get back to that, when I was a kid, you know, they had there were football games on CBS and NBC. And mm-hmm. I always felt like the CBS games and the NBC games felt totally different because of something that they did to the video on one or both. One of them always felt kind of like much warmer and fuzzier, and the other one always felt kind of colder and crisper, and I don't know why or how, it just did. And
that's funny. You were reading that letter, and that's like, as soon as he said that point about the cameras, I was like, you know what, this seems like so obvious, like it's something I should have looked into, because CBS does have that very warm tone, very warm and glossy. It could even be down to the point, I mean, because people think that this doesn't actually happen, but it does. It could even be down to you know, color choices about wardrobe and how it looks. I know that actually is a concern for some of them. I would say that I could tell them that one pretty easily. And there was a point before they started to want to become CBS Lite where I could tell a Fox sitcom pretty easily. Hmm. But now, not so much. So it's tough.
Interesting. Yeah.
And remember, there was a time you could pick up TNT and USA shows because they were like, oh, okay, that looks like a cheaper version of a network show with a really like bright, you know, blue sky feel to it.
Right.
But now everything's just dark.
You know, I think I could maybe pick out ABC shows too. I think ABC, especially their dramas, but their sitcoms too. I feel like there is kind of an ABC look and feel. I think NBC is maybe all over the place and Fox is kind of all over the place, but I don't know. It's a good point. I mean, like I said, I'm sure there's somebody out there who technically could probably say, oh yeah, this is what they're doing, because I think they are doing something, and maybe some of it is technical about color grading or whatever. And maybe, you know, maybe it's network guidelines of like, here's what we want you to do with the look of these shows, because we want to have that be part of our brand. And we never think about it that way, but it is part of what it is, sort of seeps in.
Yeah, and I think you could definitely throw the CW in there, right? I mean, for a long time, you could just pick him out because everybody was pretty and they were young.
Sure. Yep.
But it also has outside of Jane, which I think is a little different look for them because it contrasts a little bit with their superhero stuff. But I think I think your point about ABC and CBS is very astute, because I would argue that those channels, as opposed to Fox and NBC right now, those two networks are completely on brand. And they work very hard to be on brand. Paul Lee works very hard to get ABC to look like an ABC show. And we know that for decades, or, you know, I don't think it's decades, but at least 10 years, CBS has looked exactly how it's always looked. That's how it always is. It's just glossy procedurals, and it's amazing. But I would argue that, you can pick a CW is also on brand right now.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. That's really good. So there you go, My Vogue on Poetry. It does seem to be a brand extension thing. And I agree we talked about Mr. Robot. You know, that's a nice thing about having it be surprising and shocking and something different.
Right. And it's funny because I'm teaching the Mr. Robot in my visual studies class at CCA. And that is that's the poster boy series right now for shooting it in an unconventional fashion. I mean, the compositions and the framing, everything's it's just not done. You know, and there's a lot of that goes into it. I mean, I think you and I have talked about this before, but I mean, they, you know, if we've told the story before, forgive us, but it is kind of telling about how why that show looks so different. They literally had to retrain the crew on how to shoot these things, because the crew was like, you can't do that. Like, the crew looked at like how they were framing it and the compositions and all this other stuff, and they were like, that's just not done on television. Where you have a little head in the right hand corner and you've got this thing, or you're shooting two people standing up in an office and you're shooting them from just below their shoulders, which you would never do. And then you have all this ceiling space in an office, and all you see is office white lights. And so like they had to train the crew, like, yeah, that's exactly how we want it to look.
Right.
And the crew was like, wait, what? And it's because, you know, ultimately the bottom line is that the Sam Esmail, who created the series, he gave the note to, and he's directed a number of them, but he gave the note to the original director saying, what we're going to do is we want to create, without making it super obvious, we want to create this feeling of you watching this and being unsettled, because the Elliot, the main character, he's unsettled in his brain, and his how he views the world is this hodgepodge of being an addict and then also, you know, partially being on the spectrum and all this stuff. So it was really an interesting way of approaching a show visually to say, you know, we're not going to make a big deal out of it. You will eventually notice that there's a little head in the corner and no one else frames their shows like this. But it's not just to be artsy. It's because we want to create in your mind the sense of like something's off, because that's what the character is.
Right. And so they created their own little brand identity, visual identity for their show
by
doing that. Whereas a lot of, you know, maybe it makes it easier to make some of these shows. You know, it's a CBS show. You know what it's supposed to look like. You know how it's supposed to function. Although that does work against, like, My Vogue on Poetry. It works against the person of interest for them. And I had that same feeling with Elementary,
mm-hmm.
where I would kind of fight against it a little bit. And maybe to a certain degree with Limitless, too, where it's just like, it is a CBS drama. And so, you know, I have that moment of like, oh, why am I watching this? It's like, well, you know, because it's entertaining, but there's that moment where it feels so CBS. So
mm-hmm.
it's real. It's a real thing, I think.
Yeah. And it's funny, cause there's also, you know, how that director sets the template, for the original director sets the template for how it works. That's very true on Mad Men. And, you know, of course, Mad Men, very stylized, series. And then that's,
right.
You know, that continues to onward. Like, one of the things that I found kind of fascinating about Vinyl is that you have Scorsese as the guy who's setting the visual template of the show, and future episodes had to incorporate some of these really stylistic quirks. You can read in my review how they did things, and the other directors did that. But it's weird because Scorsese brings his own crew. So he basically shot a 2-hour movie and then pulled up roots.
Right.
And then the new guys came in.
Everybody else analyzed what he did.
Yeah.
Try to be like that.
And they're like, okay, now shoot it like that. Interesting.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
John, in Manchester in the +44.
Oh, we did. Yes, Manchester.
Uh-huh. And John, another of the Seppenwall Feinberg refugees.
Oh,
you know, we apologize.
We're throwing a rope out there. We actually did not kill it. And, you know, but Manchester. So Manchester United or Manchester City or just the Manchester music scene.
Yeah, could be. Could be any of those.
Yes.
There's something in almost every single modern day drama now these days that annoys me. People talking on mobile phones will frequently drop the phone away from their face as they are finishing their call. People on the other end of the call must be constantly straining to hear the end of the delivered lines as the person on the screen whips the phone away from their face while striding purposefully out of shot. The confusing thing is, surely all these people know how mobiles work. The other thing that annoys me, although I appreciate it's part of the realities of limited production time, is when day and night continuity is thrown out between scenes. Frequently one scene is set in daylight, and then as they quickly move to another location, it's suddenly the middle of the night. I did notice that in a TV show recently where I turned to my wife and said, so I guess it's night now.
That's right. Pretty obvious then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. When you see that, it is kind of funny.
And they do the day for night sometimes where it's very obviously just a blue filter. And you can tell that they just didn't want to spend the money to shoot at night. So it's a very well lit but blue kind of thing.
And then there's the opposite, which is actually, it's hard for my eye to pick it out, but some of these ones where they shoot at night and make it like a day, that's a trip to me.
That's
the
really
lighting
weird.
Is, but you know, a lot of times they have to do that if they're going to do a major city shoot.
Right.
I think that there was, I can't remember it now, it's fading from memory, but there was one where there was a major like helicopter crashes and car crashes and all the stuff on the Los Angeles freeway, which they shot completely at night. And but when it came out, it looked like it was in the day. So it was kind of interesting.
Let's see. So next, oh, and the cell phone thing. Yeah, that's true. That's mm-hmm. up. That's up there with the dial tones and boops when you press the touch screen. That also doesn't happen. There's bad phone etiquette.
So if you're pulling the phone away from your face talking, and you could mumble, you know, it's all our farts, and then no one. got you.
There we go. That's why we watch.
That's what we did. Yeah.
Okay, Clive. This is Clive from the +44. Man,
I was going to say Clive is a very British name.
That's a +44. He says he's occasionally in the 305, the 212, and the 310.
He's a traveler.
Definitely from the +44. He says, I've been binging on TV Talk Machine in the last month or so. I'm currently on episode 65 by now. He may be all the way up to episode 69. Thank you. There are many things in TV and films that make me groan because they are not a thing, mainly tech related, but there's one that's always bugged me. It's when someone locks themselves in the toilet on an airplane and the cabin crew are banging on the door shouting, sir, open the door, sir. Sir, open the door, sir. This is not a thing because every toilet door on a plane can be unlocked from the outside. There's a little flap that can simply be flipped up and the lock released. Rant over. Cheers, Clive. P.S. Why does the word underpants make Americans uncomfortable?
It really does.
It does. We can't explain it.
That's unexplainable.
Your pants are our underpants is what we're saying.
I want to know why Clive knows that the crew can unlock the bathroom door.
I think maybe Clive is either a world traveler renowned because he is on the 305, 212, and 310 in addition to being the +44, or perhaps he has some history in the airline industry.
I think
he's been on planes a lot is what I would say. I think Clive has been on planes.
You're a nice person because I immediately thought he's been in trouble somehow.
Yeah, that's right.
That's where my brain went. Clive knows this because
he tried to ride
happened.
All the way from London to New York in the bathroom and they just pulled him out.
Yes, exactly. What? Or to be consistent with our theme today, it was a Mile High Club situation.
Well, you know, when they opened the door, they got a whiff of what was inside and it was clearly all fart.
Oh my God. Now that's just below you.
Yeah.
I don't even feel like I don't even feel like that your heart was in it.
No, that was a scenario. I was building some scenarios for the farts. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Two more to go. This is Jenny from down the block in the 650.
Uh-huh.
Almost the area code record, as she says.
She feels like she's kind of left out down there.
So here it is. Dear Tim, you do such a good job with the podcast that you really work too hard and should take a break. Please go have a cup of coffee in the break room on me. Okay, is he gone now? Good. Now, Jason, a question for you. I watched the finale of season one of The Expanse, and I'm kind of unsure about whether or not to watch season two. It's great that sci-fi is actually putting on space-based shows now, but this season seems so slow until the last couple of episodes that it just barely kept my interest. I figure that either means almost the whole first season was a setup for a massive action-packed upcoming storyline, or this is a show that just meanders with fits and starts. If it's the former, great. If it's the latter, I don't think I have the patience for this in this ADD platinum era of too much TV. Since you've read the books, I'm asking for advice. What do you think we have to look forward to generally in season two? And should I stick with the show? Well, since Tim is gone to the break room,
I'm in the break room.
I'll tell you, I think the problem with the Expanse, I should say that we are doing some episodes about the Expanse on the TV podcast of The Incomparable. So you should check those out. We're going to do one more about the finale. I think the problem was that the book that they're adapting, they chose a point in the middle of that book that is a very exciting point, and they wanted that to be the end of the season, and as a result that season is kind of strangely paced. There are like two or three episodes where it seems like they just kind of put the plot on hold and try to do some world building and some character building, which is fine, but I think I agree with what you're feeling. I would say I agree with that. It is a weirdly paced first season. I thought the last three or four episodes were all great, but I think that there were two or three kind of clunkers in there. They got renewed for a 13 episode season. It sounds like they're going to be adapting the second half of the first book as well as stuff from the second book in a way sort of like what Game of Thrones did. I think they're kind of they've got a bigger chunk of plot to bite off and some more new characters in the next season. So I think I really liked how the season ended. I'm very excited for season two of The Expanse, but I would say you should stick with it because not only is that book series one of my favorites, I think it's a great story that they're telling, but I think they're going to have a lot more to tell in season two, and that they had to add characters into season one just to get there to be enough stuff in it. And it's this short 10 episodes. So I think season two is going to be a lot better, and hopefully they will have learned some of their lessons for some of the weird creative choices that they made in terms of the pacing and some of the unintelligibility of some of the characters who speak, you know, they're not speaking clearly enough to be understood, but they're maybe too clear to put subtitles. And so you end up in this weird middle space where you don't know whether you're supposed to understand them or not. Anyway, I think you should stick with it because I really liked how it ended. And I think that's the best sign, is that I thought the last three or four episodes were really good, and they'll have a lot of momentum going into season two. There you go, Jenny.
Can I come out of the room?
Come back, okay. Tim.
Okay. All right,
how was the coffee?
Ah, it was really good. It was all really right. good. All right. You were setting up for a joke, and I probably missed that.
Nobody's nobody's farting in the break.
No, I was going to say it's all of our farts.
Okay. Let's just get out of there then, man.
But yeah, I just got to get out of there. Can I just say before I forget, this would curse me if I forgot at the end to say what I want to say now.
Okay.
Or I just can't forget. I have never actually ever really used that word out loud. That's like, you know, some comedians that just tell dick jokes. I was never like to those comics. And I just like, I was never a goofy 13-year-old boy who watched Simpsons or whatever and laughed at the fart jokes. But here I am.
And here you are. Look what you've become.
As a grown man on a podcast repeatedly saying that word.
All those farts built up inside you and they had to erupt.
I'm so uncomfortable with this. It was such a bad idea.
All right. So we've come all the way back around now.
Yeah.
On repeating that joke. Okay, we have one more letter before we break. It is from Lynn in the 678. That's Atlanta Metro.
678?
Atlanta. 678. Atlanta Metro. That's a fake.
Boy, I gotta say, that's a nice area code.
Yeah, it's for one of these fake Latter Day area codes. It's pretty sweet, right?
Yeah,
that's
678.
That's like your 925, the Dolly Parton,
yeah,
the 510, the 5 and dime. This is the 678. I'm a new listener and love the show. So thank you. That's very nice.
That's
we haven't
good.
Ruined it for you yet.
We didn't. Until
today.
She's like, this is the last one.
No more.
Never again.
I wouldn't mind hearing more about what has happened to network TV, excluding the CW, which seems more like cable. Look at this new trend of live musicals. Now, I love music on TV. I'm probably most excited about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yay.
Thumbs up. But the musicals showed on network TV are so old and tired. The latest one, Grease, leaves me scratching my head. Are audiences so opposed to new works? See also reboot trend in Chicago and NCIS franchises. I don't agree with Tim that network TV needs to be graded on a curve and is automatically inferior to more niche offerings on cable and streaming. I actually love broad network shows. At this point, though, only comedies are healthy on the broadcast channels. I can't think of any new one-hour shows on network TV that excite me. A lot of my favorite shows either have signed off or will be soon. Is there any hope? It will be a huge loss to not have great TV aimed at a broad audience. I can't always watch Breaking Bad. I need shows that are done extremely well but are more mainstream. I'm curious what your thoughts are. So
interesting.
Lynn, I don't know if that's a man or a woman, honestly, but Lynn despairs for network TV.
Well, as do I. And have been. But, you know, they're still taking pretty big swings. I think they're doing some interesting things. If you look at American Crime on ABC, that's a pretty big thing.
I think it's unfair for her to say that you think that network TV is automatically inferior. It's just trying to serve something different. I mean, there are a bunch of broadcast shows that you quite like, and you've talked about on here about enjoying even some CBS shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
That work for you, and you mentioned The Blacklist and all of that. It's just they're built to do something different. As Lynn said, they're built to appeal broadly and be, you know, you can't. You know, if you got a cable audience like some of these really niche cable shows on network TV, you'd be gone. And so they're trying to appeal broadly. It's just, you know, it's not that they're lesser, right? It's just that they're playing a different game.
They are. And I think, you know, I've always said that their stronger suit is certainly comedy. I mean, for years they were doing comedy better than cable. And that's their strong suit. That's where you're going to get the wider audience. Because the drama hits are so few and far between. And if you think about it, the last big surprise hit was Empire, based around music. So it's almost, in some ways, it's almost like it's a musical, or, you know, music is such a central part of it. But that quality has dropped way down because the writing and the acting and all that stuff is not on par with the actual music. So they're struggling. I don't know where you're to find that. I think she could find other stuff, though. That's not, like she says, not Breaking Bad. I get that too. It's like at some point you just need not to have something that's constantly a downer.
Yeah.
And find something that's just enjoyable and turn your brain off. But like I said, I go to, I do Elementary and I do you know, blacklist for that.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's, I mean, with USA changing their thing, there's a little bit less of that on cable than there used to be. But there's still stuff. I mean, like the CW is a great example, and I know she excluded it, but I think that's a great example, right? Of somebody that is doing it right. And there's so many, and it's not all superhero shows. There's a variety of stuff because you've got 100, which is a sci-fi show, and iZombie, which is like a supernatural detective thing, and Supernatural is like that. But you've also got your Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and you've got Jane the Virgin, and I mean those are all, it's funny that this is where all these shows have ended up. Supergirl on CBS, again, it's a very CW kind of show, but it's you know, sunny and positive and not super dark, and I think that there's something to be said for that. And you know, those shows are out there, so they're you know, and I think it's good for network TV to do that. That's their not only their strength, but it's also counter programming to the you know, cable has the freedom to go super dark and not care if you get turned off, and you know, network doesn't have that freedom, so maybe make it a strength.
Well, yeah, and then I would just say, just add to that as far as the CW goes, that the 100 is still, you know, and people are really loving this current season, super strong start, so that network is doing really well. Also, I don't know if we mentioned Colony was renewed.
Oh yeah, that's the Josh Holloway show, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one's been renewed.
I guess I should peek in on that, since that
yeah, that's right up your alley, that, buddy.
I know, and I love Josh Holloway. I think he's great.
Yeah,
I think that's who they should have brought back to do the Rockford Files remake that they tried.
Yeah, that would
failed.
Be pretty good.
Because I think he's great. Unfortunately, that he's a cop with a chip in his head. That was not a good show.
That one was not very good. But really yes, bad. He would be good as Rockford. That's a pretty good one.
Yeah, he's yeah.
And then three season renewal for Orange is the New Black today.
Look at that Netflix spending some of that $6 billion.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting. You know, and the other thing I think came between podcasts was them renewing. House of Cards without Bo Willimon as the writer and the showrunner. That's an interesting twist. But it ties in, just real quickly, I'll put this in there, it does tie into the kind of question mark factor of booking three more seasons of Orange is the New Black with Jenji Kohan as the showrunner, because she's doing a great job with Orange, but that's like the legacy. It's like she kind of burns out and doesn't really want to finish. Like Weeds is a perfect example, you know. So you wonder, is she going to get bored or burn out on this series, and you're investing in someone who has that tendency? I think it raised a lot of eyebrows about continuity. But you know, maybe this is her jam, and she's got it down, and she's got the energy to do three more seasons. So hopefully.
Yeah, it's.
I just don't like to see any show extended that far. It seems like a lot.
I wrote a thing about Netflix and Hulu and things like that the other day, because like I mentioned on the show last week, that Doctor Who is went off streaming. I think I mentioned that last week, and it's one of these things of like there are all these talks about like the BBC is going to do their own streaming service in the US, and CBS and the CW are talking about pulling shows off of Netflix and putting them on their own streaming service, and all of that is going on. The point I want to make, and I did a back of envelope kind of calculation based on what we know about how much it costs to do House of Cards and the Marvel shows and all that, is out of that $6 billion this year, probably $1 billion of it is on that Netflix is going to spend is going to be on originals, which is a staggering amount when you think of it. But that also means $5 billion is being spent on licensing content from other people.
Yeah. That's kind of amazing.
I don't know. $1 billion on Netflix originals if they're doing, you know, however many, 31 new shows or whatever it is this year. I don't know.
There's a lot of TV, Jason. You might not have heard that.
Yeah. Well, that's why we watch.
You know what? And it's all our farts.
Yep. That's it. Well, I think we brought it all the way around to where we started.
We've done enough damage.
For episode 69.
Are we going to look back and say this one was... You know, it was like the snake eating itself.
Now we're just gonna say we got it. You know, we got it all out of our system.
We dumped all of our stuff out.
Ready to go into the 70s with.
We're not gonna suck in the 70s. Nope. We are gonna be great in the 70s.
Yeah, that's a guarantee.
We're sorry in advance for TVTM 69.
It's not in advance now. They've already heard it. This is the end.
They've suffered through.
We apologize afterward for the thing that you've just suffered through. Tim, a pleasure as always.
Yeah.
And, it's a good one. Well, yeah, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, Jason.
Bye, everybody.